Our What's Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Lori London reporting. In an elaborately coordinated response by at least five federal U.S. agencies, the United States struck back Thursday at Russia for hacking the U.S. presidential campaign with a sweeping set of punishments targeting Russia's spy agencies and diplomats. The sanctions could be pulled back by Donald Trump, who's issued a statement saying the U.S. should move on, but also vowing to meet with intelligence leaders to learn more.
President-elect Trump, of course, has had some very positive comments to make about President Putin and about Russia. He's been fairly dismissive of the hacking allegations.
That's VOA Moscow correspondent Daniel Scharf. Moscow has promised its own retaliation. There are reports that a fresh ceasefire brokered by Russia and Turkey has been broken. It went into effect in war-ravaged Syria at midnight Thursday. But a potential breakthrough in the 6 years of fighting that left more than a quarter million people dead and triggered a refugee crisis across Europe. Former president of the Syrian National Coalition, Hadi Alhambra, says the agreement does apply only to the Syrian military and rebels.
It includes all the Syrian territories, including the suburb of Damascus, Damascus, Idlib area, the suburb of Aleppo. So all the main areas, the excluded areas, are the one in the eastern side of Syria where ISIS is present.
If the truce does hold, there will be peace talks next month. It'll be a happy new year for millions of the lowest paid U.S. workers. 19 states will ring in the new year with an increase in the minimum wage. Massachusetts and Washington State will have the highest new minimum wages at $11 per hour. This is VOA News. Massive 20-ton sanitation trucks weighted with an extra 15 tons of sand will surround the iconic New Year's Eve celebration in New York's Times Square. Officials say the security measure is meant to stop deadly truck driving attacks and crowds like those in Germany and France. The trucks, along with 100 patrol cars surrounding Times Square, is a new element to an already heavily policed event. The Tunisian man who plowed a truck into a Christmas market in Berlin this month killed 12 people. His attack followed a more deadly assault in Nice, France in July that left 86 people dead. New York police studied those events in planning their Times Square security. More than a million people are expected to attend the annual ball drop countdown in New York. Officials say there are no specific terror threats. When it comes to helping patients manage chronic illnesses like diabetes or heart disease, friends and family may be helpful and more helpful than their family doctor, and they're a lot cheaper, too. That's the conclusion of analysts at the University of Pennsylvania. In an article in the New England Journal of Medicine, behavioral economists said leveraging existing social relationships can lead to new healthy habits and behaviors, such as improvements in diet and exercise. The number of U.S. police officers killed in the line of duty increased sharply in 2016 following multiple attacks on law enforcement officials, including ambushes in Dallas and Louisiana. A new report shows 135 officers died on the job this year, some in traffic accidents, but nearly half were shot to death. That's a 56% increase in shooting deaths over the previous year. The attacks have complicated the nationwide conversation on the use of force by police in America, especially against African-American men. President Barack Obama has designated two new national monuments in Utah and Nevada at sites that have become key flashpoints over public land in the U.S. West. The announcement marks the administration's latest move to protect environmentally sensitive areas in his final days in office. The White House says Bears Ears National Monument in Utah will cover 1.35 million acres of tribal land. A coalition of tribes pushed to ensure protections for lands that are home to an estimated 100 archaeological sites, including ancient cliff dwellings. Critics call it another layer of unnecessary federal control that would close the area to development. And Serena Williams is tying the knot. The tennis great announced her engagement to Alex Ohanian on Thursday, posting a poem on Reddit that she accepted the proposal of the social news website's co-founder. I'm Lori London in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today is Friday, December 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Gambian diaspora rallies today for international support to push President Jammeh out.
We're having this protest today in New York City in front of the United Nations to draw the attention of the world leaders here in New York to tell them to intervene so that President Jammeh would understand and respect the wishes of the Gambian people.
Saihu Mbalo is a member of the Gambian diaspora community. A special corruption task force in Liberia has revealed evidence in what is being seen as the country's biggest corruption scandal. The European Union and Mali haggle over a deal to stem illegal migration, and South Africa's ruling ANC party looks to President Zuma's successor.
It's no longer subject of doubt that Zuma's leadership is actually destroying the integrity of the ANC. The question now is how long would it take for the ANC to come back from this?
That's independent political analyst Ralph Matega. Church leaders in South Sudan want to lead a national dialogue for peace. And Burundi's most successful musician is in the country to sing for peace. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Some Gambians in the United States will rally today in front of the United Nations for the international community to force President Yahya Jammeh to accept the results of the December 2nd presidential poll. Mr. Jammeh first conceded defeat but changed his mind because, according to him, the Electoral Commission has said it made a mistake in the tabulation of the votes. Jammeh said he will await for a Supreme Court ruling in the case he brought against the Electoral Commission before ceding power. The United Nations has joined West African leaders in calling on Jammeh to relinquish power. Saihu Mbalo is one of the organizers of today's rally. He says all countries should expel Mr. Jammeh's ambassadors and accept in their place ambassadors appointed by President-elect Adama Barrow.
We're having this protest today in New York City in front of the United Nations in response to the situation in the Gambia to draw the attention of the world leaders here in New York to tell them to intervene so that President Jammeh would understand and respect the wishes of the Gambian people.
As you know, the West African leaders have already called on Mr. Jammeh to accept the results. I think the United Nations has also done so. What sort of pressure do you want to be brought on Mr. Jammeh?
Right now, the pressure that we want is we want the international community to take an action. We want them to expel all ambassadors that are representing President Jammeh worldwide, and that to recognize the wishes of the people and also to accept the ambassadors that are going to be appointed very soon by President-elect Adama Barrow. That is a step that we want them to recognize and accept and do it as soon as possible.
Mr. Jammeh has gone to the Supreme Court of the Gambia in a case that he brought against the Election Commission. He wants the court to decide that case before he makes any decision whether he's going to accept the results of the election. Because he said that there were some irregularities.
Yes, according to him, there is irregularities. But according to the constitution here, there are some conflicts. Because to lodge an election petition, we understand at least you should do it within the 10 days of declaration of the election results. And for him, he lodged these election petitions around the 13th of December. That was almost 2 weeks after the declaration of the results. So that being the case, if we go by the electoral laws, by the constitution, which we respect fully, but then it is not in line with the electoral laws. Based on that, we don't think whether it is fit for the court to recognize that petition.
There's talk that the West African leaders might use military force to force Mr. Jammeh to accept the results. Are you in favor of that?
Mr. Botin, as a human rights activist, I am totally against using force to remove a government. Likewise, I am totally against a military coup d'etat. I believe Jammeh can relinquish power by other means, that is, by sanctions and also by refusing to accept anything to do with any business, anything to do with his government. Like not to accept to do any business with his government. Like I said earlier on, to expel his ministers that are representing his government worldwide. If they are expelled by other foreign governments, that means Jammeh is going to be meaningless. The government is going to be meaningless, coupled with sanctions that will be imposed on him, and then recognizing the President-elect Barrow government doing business with President-elect Barrow I think that would work.
The Election Commission offices, which were shut down by the security forces, reopened on Thursday. What do you think is happening? Do you think the people working in that on the Election Commission, do you think they feel intimidated by what is happening?
Well, they have been intimidated. The fact that they were in the office and the security men, armed men, came and kicked them out of the office and changed the locks, locked the offices. That is another way of intimidating officials.
Saiho Mbalo is a member of the Gambian diaspora community and one of the organizers of today's rally at the United Nations. He was speaking with me from New York City. A special corruption task force in Liberia has revealed evidence in what is being seen as the country's biggest corruption scandal, which has so far led to the downfall of the Speaker of the House of Representatives. Jay Fonati Kofa, who chairs the task force, says the evidence includes testimonies of some of the major players coupled with email exchanges as well as business records. He says it also reveals what has been the key mystery in the Global Witness report, which uncovered the scandal, and that is the real names of Big Boys 1 and 2, who, according to the report, took $250,000 each, the lion's share of the nearly $1 million scheme.
As you recall, about 10 days or so ago, the defendants filed a motion to produce the evidence, which we call in litigation discovery. They are entitled to see every piece of material that will be used against them in trial so that they can prepare for trial. What we released to them were 517 pages that included company records, records of their lawyers in Liberia, and eyewitness testimonies and statements of witnesses who were involved in the matter.
When you say the defendants, you're talking about Councillor Vannie Shermer, and does that also include former Speaker Alex Tyler?
Yes, that motion was specifically filed by Honorable Tyler's lawyers, and because he filed it, all of the defendants are entitled to it. All of them get the benefit.
So this evidence that you have found, does it tie former Speaker Tyler directly to the allegations that are in question here, meaning that he accepted bribery involving this civil mining company?
Well, that's a matter for trial. Let me not be too specific as to who did what. First of all, we would not have charged anyone we did not believe was engaged in wrongful conduct. And we believe the evidence that we have produced will prove that beyond a reasonable doubt with the jury of their peers.
Mr. Kofa, when the Global Witness report came out, the mystery in that report was the so-called Big Boy 1 and Big Boy 2. Now, according to the evidence you have now, do you know who Big Boy 1 and Big Boy 2 are?
Yeah, I think the evidence is sufficient not to proffer who we believe they are. And I think one of the local dealers themselves went through the evidence and uncovered that.
So is it true that Big Boy 1 is the former Lands and Mine Minister, Dr. Eugene Shiner? Is that correct, Big Boy 1?
Actually, I don't want to go into specifics again to characterize the evidence, but I believe the evidence tend to point in that direction, yes.
What ties him to this? I mean, how did you discover that these people were Big Boy 1 and Big Boy 2?
In the discovery of the matter of Big Boy 1 and Big Boy 2, we relied on direct eyewitness testimony and we relied on business records.
One question that I think continues to linger is that some people wonder, when are you going to charge the other people who were involved in these allegations? One name keep coming up, Mr. Setuma, who we understand is the legal advisor to the president. If he is involved, then when are you going to charge these people besides just Speaker Alex Tyler and Vannie Shermer?
We anticipate those indictments will indeed come down probably sometime next week. Let me tell you what is the limiting factor here. We had requested for a long time bank records. We only just received the bank records yesterday. And in order to make the remaining indictments comprehensive, we want to rely on the information we receive from those bank records. So we're doing a little bit of probe. The indictments are almost ready to go. When we are ready, we'll ask for a special grand jury. And it takes us a matter of one day to hand those indictments down.
Jeff Onati Kofa is the chair of the Special Presidential Corruption Task Force in Liberia. You are speaking with me from Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, December 30th. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Mali and the European Union are still wrangling over a deal to try to curb the illegal flow of people to Europe and return those who already have arrived and been denied asylum. Critics in Bamako say the proposal doesn't do enough to create economic opportunities and break the cycle of migration. Katerina Hoye has more from Dedene in southwest Mali.
Slumped on a bench in a village in southwestern Mali, Numa Bagayogo has only one thing on his mind. The 44-year-old is preparing to leave his wife and children behind to try and make it to Europe for the second time. He says, "I don't have anything here. That is why I need to go and try to find a means elsewhere. Migration is a culture, it is all we know. Every year, young men from villages in western Mali set out on a treacherous journey through the Sahara Desert and across the Mediterranean. Many fail and some die trying, but those who succeed change lives back home in places like Didini, this small rural village a couple of hours by road from the capital Bamako. In Didini, almost every family I met has at least one or two sons that have left to try to find work in Europe or other African countries. According to Mayor Dauphin Koulibaly, two-thirds of the village residents rely heavily on the money relatives abroad send back. Remittances are one reason the negotiations between the government and the European Union have sparked such a debate in Mali. No agreement has been signed yet, but a communique early this month from the Dutch Foreign Ministry, which has been heading negotiations with Mali, said the country would receive development support of $115 million through measures aimed at both creating jobs and strengthening border security. In return, the EU has proposed that Mali identify Malian migrants denied asylum and help them return home. In Didini, families worry how that would affect them. Tima Diara has six sons abroad, two in Spain, two in Mauritania, and two who are working as blacksmiths in Gabon.
No, pas du tout. La migration va toujours continuer.
He says, if they stop the migration, how will we survive? If the harvest is bad one year, I call my sons and ask them to send money so we can buy food. When our elders fall ill, they help to pay for the medical costs. Residents say the relatives abroad have been doing what the government has not, developing their village. You can see the investment in satellite dishes, the water tower, and the new concrete constructions on the outskirts of town. Nuhum Koulibaly spent 15 years in Paris working in construction and sending money home. He says deportation is not the answer. They need to find a means to improve things here. Then the youth will stay here. They can't wait until they have already gone to Europe, he says. The EU has launched information campaigns to warn potential migrants of the hazards on the routes through northern Mali and Niger and the dangers facing them in Libya, Algeria and southern Europe. Not to mention the Mediterranean, where nearly 5,000 migrants have drowned in the past year, about half of them Africans, according to the International Organization for Migration, IOM. People spend large amounts of money trying to reach Europe, funds that could be better used in their home countries, says David Kumber of the IOM. But in Mali, research has shown that higher household incomes actually have tended to increase migration as more families can afford upfront payment to traffickers. Katerina Heye for VOA News, Didini, Mali.
In South Africa, the next presidential election is still over 2 years away, but the possible candidates are already a hot topic of national debate after the turbulent political ups and downs of the past year. Tuso Kumalo reports for VOA from Johannesburg.
President Jacob Zuma emerges from 2016 bruised and battered by yet another chain of corruption scandals. He survived an impeachment attempt and a string of motions for a vote of no confidence, and investigations into his conduct continue. Although Zuma still enjoys support, some, both outside and within the party, are already talking about his successor as the head of the ruling African National Congress. The ANC suffered unprecedented losses in local elections in August, losing control of several key cities. The Democratic Alliance, DA, and the Economic Freedom Fighters, EFF, cut into the ANC support base in those polls. independent political analyst Ralph Mateha.
It's no longer subject of doubt that Zuma's leadership is actually destroying the integrity of the ANC. The question now is, how long would it take for the ANC to come back from this?
Zuma can't run again in 2019. He will have served his two-term limit. Party rules will not allow him to remain as ANC head either. A front runner to succeed him is his former wife and soon-to-be ex-African Union Commission chair, Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma. She steps down from the AU post in January. Dlamini-Zuma has strong support in the party's largest province of KwaZulu-Natal. However, the opposite camp, largely dominated by the ANC's alliance partners, wants current Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa to take the reins. Political analyst Karima Brown says both candidates are seen as less tainted than Zuma.
The factions are basically stacking up. What will be interesting for me is what the combinations are of a top six, and it will be interesting to see if Cyril Ramaphosa's availability splits the KwaZulu-Natal vote and how that impacts the rest of the ANC.
The ANC has dominated South African politics since the end of apartheid in 1994. The new party leader would still likely be the favorite in the 2019 presidential elections, but it won't be an easy ride.
First of all, the new leader has to restore credibility of people in government. You've got to restore people's confidence that when wrongdoing happens, there will be consequences. You know, it doesn't mean the person has to be perfect, has to come up with a perfect policy, because there is no such. You just need someone who's not interested in being corrupt.
Mateha warns that a compromise candidate could emerge given the fact that Ramaphosa and Dlamini Zuma are supported by what looks like opposing factions. The suspense may not end anytime soon. The ANC isn't scheduled to hold the conference where it could elect a new leader until the end of 2017. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Burundi's most successful musician, Kidum, is in Burundi for the second time singing for peace in the country. The musician is among several prominent figures who have returned to Burundi recently to contribute to efforts towards peace in the country. Moses Javier Rimana has the story from Bujumbura.
Jean-Pierre Nimbona, a.k.a. Kidumu, is considered as the most successful Burundian musician. He fled the country in 1995 during the civil war to seek refuge in Kenya, where he developed his talent as a professional musician in Nairobi after writing his first song in 1999. Kidum was named the best male artist in East Africa in 2012 by Kora Awards and named as the ambassador for peace, a position that helps foster hope and reconciliation in East Africa. After more than 2 years of no show in Burundi, he is returning with a countrywide tour, spreading the message of peace and reconciliation to Burundians ahead of the new year.
Burundians have got messages since the days of Julius Nyerere. They've been getting messages, and we are getting bored of those messages. Politicians, they know what they are doing. I don't know if there is an accident in politics. They know how they do it. They should leave us alone. Some people, they just rely on an everyday life. And I'm among those people. They just want a bread to their table. They should stop sacrificing people to their political gains.
The singer is among the other prominent figures who decided to come back to the country. Sylvestre Ntibantunganya, a former Burundian president who was said to have fled the country to Belgium last year, returned back this month. He denied to have fled the country, and that he needed to contribute in peace-building activities in the country.
I don't fled. No, I was going. I gone in Belgium for an activity, and after I was prepared to come back. But when I arrived in Belgium, the police said to me that my passport was a stolen passport. I have never been a refugee in Belgium. Never. Now I am back in Burundi. The situation about security is not like it was. There are here. You also, you can see it.
Sylvestre Ntibantunganya was deposed by Pierre Buyoya in military coup in 1996 after replacing President Cyprien Ntaryamira, who was killed in a plane crash with the Rwandan president Juvenal Habyarimana in 1994. Not all were happy about Kidumu's tour in Burundi, as the opposition in exile said that the musician supports President Pierre Nkurunziza's government, but Kidumu himself says he is not involved in politics.
They are the refugees now. I am the refugee since 1995, which is 21 years ago. They should ask me. I am a veteran refugee. I know, saying about having the refugee status, I am the pioneer. I'm a freelance musician, and after this, I will go back where I normally stay, which is Kenya.
As efforts to solve the current political crisis is ongoing, Moses Habyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa. I suppose here's Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning, James. We begin with cricket news as Kagiso Rabada made two crucial breakthroughs as South Africa chipped away at a stubborn Sri Lanka batting order on the fourth day of the first test at the St. George's Park on Thursday. Sri Lanka were 240/5 at the close of play with their last two recognized batsmen out of the crease after being set to make an improbable 488 to win. South Africa will now go into the final day armed with a second new ball, which is only 3 overs old, needing to break a stand between Angelo Matthews and Dahajana da Silva in order to get among the Sri Lanka tail enders. From South Africa to North Africa, where the Tunisian handball team beat the Basque countries 24-21 during the second friendly match between the two teams played on Thursday night in Bilbao. The team will continue their build-up preparations in Hammamet until they leave for Croatia, where they will play two other friendly matches against the Croatian national team on January the 7th and Montenegro's on January the 8th before going to France on January the 11th. At the World Handball Championship in France, which begins on January the 11th, to end on the 29th, Tunisia is in Group B alongside Spain, Slovenia, Macedonia, Iceland, and Angola. To football news now, Al Ahly coach Hossam El Badari refused to get carried away with a Cairo Derby victory over Zamalek on Thursday, insisting that there is still a long way to go in the Egyptian Premier League. Two goals from Mohamed Zakaria and substitute Junior Ajayi helped Al Ahly maintain a 9-year unbeaten run in the league against Zamalek and extended their lead over their arch rivals to 11 points, although the latter still have 2 games in hand. And now to preparations towards the AFCON 2017 Championships in Gabon. English side Aston Villa have pleaded with Ghana football authorities to delay the arrival of striker Jordan Ayew for the country's training camp for the 2017 African Cup of Nations. Players must be released by their club for the 2017 African Cup of Nations training camp by the 1st of January. Staying with Ghana, Kwadwo Asamoah has reportedly asked to be left out of the Ghana squad for the 2017 African Cup of Nations. And to Morocco, where OGC Nice midfielder Yonis Belhanda will miss the 2017 African Cup of Nations finals after sustaining a toe injury. The Morocco international got injured during Nice's goalless stalemate with Bordeaux in the French League game on Wednesday. And now to Nigeria, where Super Eagles Carl Ikeme has signed a new contract extension at Champions Club Wolverhampton Wanderers. And Nigeria's sports ministry says it will investigate the allegations that the Super Eagles players were not given their full win bonuses for beating Algeria 3-1 in the 2018 World Cup qualifier in Uyo last month. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's over to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson, and have a very good weekend and a happy new year. That's it for this Friday, December 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa will have a very good weekend and a happy, happy, happy new year.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.